were taken away in a Black Maria on suspicion of being a traitor to the crown. I steadied my voice. Surely that's not the reason you've arrested him. You seem much too smart a young man to arrest someone on hearsay, Superintendent.
Blackburn shook his head. I do apologize for passing along the unpleasant news, miss. I am truly sorry.
He shifted on his feet, trying to maintain his balance while still perched on the ground before me.
We've also found some rather disturbing diagrams and drawings of these mechanisms, best described as...
He paused, the tips of his ears turning a slight pink. I motioned for him to get on with it.
Forgive me, I didn't want to overstep my bounds, but they appear to be torture devices. Some ideas fit with mechanical parts Scotland Yard found at the murder scenes. They believe only someone with an intimate knowledge of the crime would be able to construct such atrocities. As I said earlier, your uncle possesses such knowledge. Now we've got drawings of similar devices found in his laboratory.
He nodded toward the officer who'd just located the hidden bolts.
Then there's the matter of those parts. You're an intelligent girl. I'm sure you can deduce what that dark substance is without my spelling it out. I truly want to believe your uncle's innocent. There are all these things saying otherwise. I cannot ignore what's laid out before me, even if I want to. The public wants this to be over.
I've heard there are at least 4 men in custody for the crimes, I said, hoping to shed doubt on their case. 2 of whom are in asylums. Surely that works in Uncle's favour. They all can't be guilty.
We simply cannot take any chances. He'll be looked after in Bethlehem Royal Hospital, I assure you, Miss Wadsworth.
What? I couldn't believe this was happening. I gathered my enraged thoughts, corralling them into a cage, willing them to be tamed. Maintaining a sense of serenity was what I needed to do. But it was hard when all I longed to do was shake these men from their short-sighted stupor. Bethlehem Royal Hospital, known to most everyone as Bedlam, was horrendous. Uncle could not stay there. You must believe me, I whispered, angry tears burning my eyes. I know how it looks, but I assure you my uncle is an innocent man. He's brilliant and shouldn't be punished for finding the right avenue to search. He lives and breathes a case when he's involved with it. I'm sure he's got plenty of good reason to be in possession of those items. He probably did those sketches after attending the scene. You simply need to ask him. This is how he works. You must know that. Superintendent Blackburn gave me a pitying look. I'd find no help here. He was duty sworn and that was that. Blackburn wouldn't release my uncle based on his denial of being involved alone. He'd need proof, even if it came wrapped in another body shroud. I clamped my mouth shut and stood. If I stayed a moment longer, I was in danger of being hauled off to Bedlam myself. Uncle might be innocent, but I'd definitely be guilty of slapping some sense into these brutes, with my parasol if need be. I motioned to Thomas, who was still glaring at the police collectively, and swept from the room like a storm rushing through the streets, cleansing all the grit in a mad downpour. To hell with them all.
Chapter 14. Proper ladies don't discuss corpses. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 14th September, 1888. Standing in the doorway of our dining room was like gazing upon something familiar yet undeniably foreign at the same time. There were so many place settings laid out, I felt dizzy. Small topiaries were arranged on the table, along with several towering bouquets of exotic hothouse flowers. Pink and white porcelain cups were awaiting their warm liquid, while their matching plates stood at the ready.
"You look as if you're expecting the blade of the guillotine, cousin," Liza said, waltzing into the room. "It's not as if you've been raised by wolves. You've missed only a few months of gossip. You'll catch up in no time," she said. "If you can deal with blood and other horrendous things, a little lace and tea will surely be nothing."
I tore my attention away from the table and looked at my cousin. She sounded like my mother for a brief moment, and my nerves settled. I smiled.
If Aunt Amelia was the embodiment of what all proper young ladies should aspire to, Liza was her shining protégé. Except Liza had a fascinating way of flouting tradition when it suited her romantic notions. Growing up, we saw each other only twice a year, but that hadn't prevented her from saying we were the very best of friends. She was 3 months older, which, in her opinion, made her infinitely wiser on all matters, especially those of the heart. Her hair, somewhere between caramel and chocolate, was twisted into an intricate design about her crown. I'd love to fashion mine in a similar way. Her dress was made of watered silk and was of the most gorgeous lavender I'd ever seen. The stitching was superb. A flash of the last cadaver I'd sewn back together crossed my mind. Not to boast, but my stitches had been as good, perhaps a pinch better.
Isn't it grand?
You could say that, I replied before I could stop myself. Liza turned to me, grinning.
You can play the gossip game nicely today, then go about your secret detective business tonight. It could be just like a novel.
She clapped her hands together.
How thrilling! Perhaps I'll tag along with you on some of your adventures. Are there any handsome boys to flirt with? There's nothing better than a little danger, dashed with some romance.
My thoughts turned to Thomas's face. Liza laughed again, the sound like tinkling bells in a fairy tale. I flushed, struggling to regain my composure.
Not really. Don't hold back, cousin. This is the best part. Ooh, I've an idea. Come.
Liza dragged me down the hallway, up the stairs, and into the room we'd set up for her stay. Before closing the door, she quickly scanned the corridor for her mother. But Aunt Amelia was buzzing about near the kitchen, commanding the staff like a colonel at war. Satisfied we were alone, Liza ushered me over to her dressing table, then pulled out a makeup kit far more complex than my post-mortem tools.
So, what's his name?
She tugged a brush through my hair, pulling and twisting black strands with expert ease. I gritted my teeth, not wanting to show how uncomfortable I was with the harsh primping or topic. Surely if I could sit for Uncle in his laboratory, I could suffer through this. I immediately chided myself. Uncle was trapped in an asylum, and I was only having my hair styled. I needed to keep perspective.
Whose name? I asked, steering my mind from unpleasant things.
For some reason, Thomas was a secret I'd like to keep.
Stop playing coy. The handsome boy who's stolen your heart, that's who.
Liza stepped back, admiring her work before grabbing the coal. I tried not to cringe. I'd already lined my eyes lightly and wasn't keen on being made into something I was not. I'd delicately put a stop to my maid's heavy-handed rouging.
Tell me everything about him, Liza said. What he looks like, what color his eyes are, if he wants to run away with you to some beautifully exotic paradise, how many children you're going to have. I hope he plays piano. All good men should be so well-rounded. Oh, tell me he's deliciously smart and writes you romantic poetry. I bet he composes Shakespearean sonnets by moonlight, with stars dancing in his eyes, doesn't he?
I cast my attention down, searching for a way out of the conversation, but my cousin gripped my chin, forcing me to look up while she lined my eyes. She quirked a brow, waiting for my response. Stubbornness was a trait she'd inherited from the Wadsworth side of the family. I sighed. Wasn't I looking forward to sharing this sort of gossip with my cousin a few days ago? His eyes are golden brown when he's intrigued by something. He's regal-looking and handsome, but he's more interested in formulas and solving crimes than he is in me or poetry. He acts devilishly warm one moment, then frigid the next, I said. So there will be no children or any beautiful paradise in our future. Most of the time I cannot even tolerate his presence. His arrogance is, I don't know, annoying.
Silly. Arrogance usually hides something below the surface. It's your duty to unearth it.
Liza dabbed my lips with her fingers, then shook her head.
It's truly tragic.
She handed me a napkin.
Now blot.
I mimicked her motion of blotting my lips with the napkin, taking careful pains to not smudge the colour she'd stained my lips with. When I was done to her satisfaction, she nodded, then pointed to the looking glass on the vanity.
What's tragic?
She raised her brows.
You're in love with him,
and he's most certainly in love with you. You're just both being obtuse. Trust me, I said, facing the looking glass. He's the foolish one.
Well, we must show your foolish boy this girl, then.
I'm sure you'd become an equation he'd desperately enjoy solving. She tapped my nose.
Wield your assets like a blade, cousin.
No man has invented a corset for our brains.
Let them think they rule the world. It's a queen who sits on that throne. Never forget that.
There's no reason you can't wear a simple frock to work, then don the finest gown and dance the night away.
But only if it pleases you.
I stared at Liza for a few beats, seeing her in an entirely new light. She nodded toward the looking glass again, somehow knowing I hadn't truly seen myself before. My reflection shone back, lit almost as if the heavens themselves were shining down on me. Dark strands of hair were piled atop my head, my eyes more mysterious somehow with the dark liner, and my lips were the bright crimson of freshly spilled blood. I was beautiful and dangerous at once. A rose with thorns. I was precisely who I wanted to be. Oh, I turned from side to side, admiring the full look.
It's lovely, Liza. You must teach me how to do this.
I thought of my mother and the saris she'd brought me to wear from Grandmama's homeland. I felt just as stunning now as I did then, and the memory warmed me. Mother used to dress us up and hire a cook to make savory delicacies for us every month, hoping to keep the traditions of India alive in us. Father happily participated in our worldly dinners, eating raita and fried breads with his hands. We'd drag Nathaniel in for our feasts, but he was always unimpressed by eating without silverware. He'd say, "I cannot tolerate being so messy," then storm out in his little suit. How I missed those simpler days. Liza ran her gaze over my ensemble, then immediately rummaged through her trunk, tossing dresses and corsets and fabrics over her head until she settled on one.
"What's wrong with my dress?"
I asked, touching the rose embroidery on the skirts.
"I just had this one made,
and it was quite beautiful."
"Nothing's wrong with it, silly," Liza said. "But I'd love to see you in my tea gown. Ah, here it is."
A cream lace gown with pale pink underskirts was promptly thrown over my head and tied in the back before I even knew what was happening. Liza wiped her hands off in a gesture of finality, pleased with her efforts.
"There! You're darling! I always wished my hair was as dark as yours. Makes the green of your eyes nearly emerald."
I stood there, staring at my image. It seemed a horrid contradiction to the reality of the world and what was going on in it. Here I was playing dress-up, while Uncle was in the asylum and a murderer was butchering innocent women. Liza was at my side steadying me before I collapsed onto the divan.
"I know," she nodded sagely, misinterpreting my thoughts. "It's a gorgeous gown. You must keep it. Come, it's time to greet our guests. I've heard Victoria and her sister Regina are coming. Their father does something with Parliament, and I've heard the most interesting rumours."
It felt as if I were watching through someone else's eyes the events unfolding before me. Aunt Amelia sat at the head of the table, a queen holding court during her royal tea. Liza sat on my right, while the esteemed Victoria Edwards sat on my left, her button nose turned permanently upward. A royal tea was different from high tea, in that it began with a glass of champagne and did not include supper. That much I remembered. Sandwiches, savouries, scones and sweets were laid out across the table, more riches and delicacies than all of Nathaniel's favourite imported cheeses and fine foods combined. Uncle's arrest was responsible for my nerves, making me forgetful. It had been only a few months since I'd last attended such a formal tea, and though I didn't care for them, I wasn't normally so distracted. I stirred my tea, then set my spoon behind my cup, as was proper. Victoria turned to me, a slight smile fixed to her face. I'm so sorry to learn of your uncle, Audrey Rose. Must be quite difficult having such a ruthless criminal in the family.
I'd just taken a bite of a cucumber sandwich and barely swallowed my surprise down. Liza jumped in, rescuing me with her quick tongue.
Such a shame. If they can accuse someone as brilliant as our uncle, surely they can accuse just about anyone.
Perhaps, she leaned forward, her voice dropping to a whisper. They'll set their sights on members of Parliament next. It'd make for a rather sensational story, wouldn't you agree?
Up until that last point, Aunt Amelia had been smiling and nodding, proud of her daughter's appropriate response. When Liza flashed a grin my way, my aunt's face turned a furious shade of red. She straightened, then dabbed at her mouth with a lace napkin we'd undoubtedly stitched.
Now, girls, she glanced between us, let's not allow our imaginations to get away from us. We shouldn't gossip or speculate on such matters. It isn't polite.
But it's true, Mama,
Liza insisted, garnering curious gazes from around the table.
Some royals are under suspicion. It's all everyone in London's talking about.
Aunt Amelia looked as if she'd swallowed an egg whole. After a moment, she threw her head back and laughed, a sound more forced than her thin smile.
See, this is precisely why speaking of such things is a waste of time and energy. No royal would truly be under suspicion.
Now who'd like more tea?
Victoria, displeased by the turn in conversation, faced me a second time.
You look rather pretty this afternoon, Audrey Rose. To be perfectly honest, I wasn't sure what we'd been invited to. Given all the rumours swirling around about your association with that strange assistant of your uncle's. What's his name? Mr. Cresswell?
Another girl, whose name I thought was Hazel, nodded.
Oh, yes, I've heard about him from my brother.
Says he's got as much feeling as an automaton.
She smiled wickedly, though I've heard he's quite good-looking. And his family does have a title. He can't be all bad.
Mr. William Bradley told me he's got his own flat on Piccadilly Street, Regina added, looking pleased to involve herself in the conversation. Honestly, what kind of parents allow their son to live on his own before he's come of age? I don't care how rich they are. It isn't proper.
She pressed a hand to her chest.
I wouldn't be surprised to discover he's killed those women and hid their bodies away. Maybe Liza's right. Maybe Dr. Wadsworth is innocent, and it's Mr. Cresswell who's truly the madman. I bet he's got a slew of unsavory women coming and going there. He might be heir to a good fortune, but who'd marry such an odd fellow? He'd probably murder his own wife. Be serious, I said before I could stop myself. Because he's interested in science hardly makes him a murderer or automaton. In fact, there's absolutely nothing wrong with Thomas. I find him to be quite agreeable.
Mind your tongue, Audrey Rose, Aunt Amelia fanned herself. Addressing a boy by his Christian name is inappropriate, especially when you're not involved.
If I thought my aunt was upset before, this was a whole new level of emotion. How quickly her tea had turned into discussions of the macabre and impolite. I held my eye roll in. At least tea was more interesting than I imagined it'd be. The other girls quickly lost interest in Thomas Cresswell and the tragic and disturbing murders affecting the lower-class slums. Conversation moved to more suitable afternoon tea subject matters, like who was going to be invited to the Duke's coming-of-age masquerade in 6 months.
You simply must come,
Victoria was saying to me, threading her arm through mine as if we were already the very best of friends, and she hadn't just called my uncle a murderer.
Everyone who's important will be there. If you want the right people attending your party, you'll need to make an effort to attend theirs.
I hear he's even hired a spiritualist to perform a séance. As the afternoon wore on, I watched them, noting the role they were all playing. I doubted any of them truly cared about what they were saying, and felt immensely sorry for them. Their minds were crying out to be set free, but they refused to unbind them. Hazel leaned across the table, catching my attention.
Your dress is absolutely divine. Would you be terribly bothered if I had one made like it?
When I didn't respond straight away, she amended.
In different colours, naturally.
It's just the design is so gorgeous.
If William Bradley doesn't fall to his knees proposing at first glance, Regina said, smearing a scone with curd and cream, he's a fool and you need to leave him at once.
Hazel sighed dramatically.
But he's a fool with a title. You really think he'd propose if I wore a similar gown?
How could he not? I teased, holding back laughter at her serious expression. Surely boys are interested in proposing only to girls in lacy gowns. Why care about beauty and brains when they can have beauty over brains? Foolish creatures they are.
Hazel drew her brows together.
Why ever would a girl choose anything over beauty? A wife should abide by her husband in all matters. Let him do the thinking.
Both Regina and Hazel nodded at that dreadful sentiment before Hazel continued.
Anyway, you truly are the sweetest thing, Audrey Rose. Will you be attending the circus when it comes to town?
Perhaps I'd been wrong in my earlier judgment. It seemed it'd take a little more time for some girls to free themselves from chains society placed upon them. I bit my lip, thinking of a response that wouldn't offend them further.
Victoria, abandoning her conversation with my cousin and aunt, clapped her hands together.
Oh, yes! You simply must join us. We'll coordinate our attire and everything. People won't know who to look at first, the performers or us.
My aunt nodded her encouragement from across the table, her expression threatening something more unpleasant than even Leather Apron could dream up. I smiled tightly.
That sounds lovely.
Chapter 15. Greatest Show on Earth. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 25th September 1888.
You're not serious,
Nathaniel said, shaking his head at another of my nearly all-black ensembles. I glanced at layers of black, broken up by deep charcoal and silver-striped silk, then lifted a shoulder. Why ever not? There's nothing wrong with the dress. My corset was pulled tightly over my silky chemise. My gloves were a soft, supple leather, with covered buttons running up the sides, and my bustle was annoying me greatly. Judging from how uncomfortable I was, I'd say I was downright stunning this evening. If one could see beyond the dark circles refusing to relinquish their grip on my eyes, or the way the midnight colours accentuated how pale I'd become. The Edwards sisters wouldn't approve of my colour choice, but I didn't quite care. I'd attended three more of Aunt Amelia's royal teas, and though they weren't as bad as I'd originally anticipated, it left less time for sleuthing. Anyway, it's been nearly 2 weeks since Uncle was arrested, I said. Neither Thomas nor I had found a scrap of information to exonerate him. I'll be dressed in the colour of mourning until he's freed, and I don't care if it's fashionable or not. Nathaniel sighed.
I suppose it works well enough for Her Royal Highness. If even the City of London refuses to be anything other than grey and dreary all the time, you might as well act the same.
Blessedly, Aunt Amelia and Liza came down the stairs, looking resplendent in hues of emerald and turquoise, the precise colour palette Victoria decided on during our last tea. Nathaniel bowed to them.
Good evening, Aunt. Cousin. You're both visions.
You are too kind, nephew, Aunt Amelia replied, feigning humility. Thank you. Liza came over and kissed my cheek, shaking her head ever so slightly.
Your eyes look stunning this evening, she said,
looping her arm through mine, completely ignoring the drab colour I was in.
I'm so pleased you've taken to the call. Thomas Cresswell certainly must be in love. Has he commented on it?
I thought on our meetings. Thomas pretended to be more arrogant lately, commenting on how I'd made an effort for him. But then I'd catch him staring, as if he were trying to deduce and was unsuccessful for the first time. He wasn't sure if I truly was doing it to entice his affections or for my own purposes, and I suspected it drove him mad. Before I answered, Aunt Amelia waved the question away like a pesky gnat. What does it matter? That boy won't amount to anything in society. His family name might be good, but he's destroyed any decent prospects. Audrey Rose has other, more accomplished suitors coming her way. Come, Liza. She tossed her shawl about her shoulders and headed down the corridor.
We'll see you both at the circus.
See you there.
My brother gripped a letter in his hand, crinkling its edges before smoothing it on his pressed pant leg. He reached for his comb, but thought better of it. Thank goodness. I was certain if he touched one more strand of hair, it had run away, screaming in protest. The image almost made me smile before I caught myself.
Are you certain you don't want to change? I thought you were excited for the circus,
he said, defeated.
All you talked about for the last several months were the curiosities, menageries, and what of Jumbo? Poor chap's finally coming home, and you're greeting him wearing the color of death. What kind of miserable welcome is that for an elephant who's traveled half the world? Aunt Amelia and Liza look like precious stones, while you're making your best coal impersonation. It simply isn't right.
He paced the parlor, hands twitching at his sides.
I've got it! How about we dress you in that horse costume? What was it called? The Devil's Auction or something equally charming?
I wanted to smile but couldn't quite bring myself to do it convincingly. Months ago I cared about things like three-ring stages and larger-than-life elephants. I'd even laughed about the postcard we'd found with the strange horse-head-wearing performer. There are unsolved murders, and Uncle is being held under suspicion, I said. Now isn't the time for levity.
Yes, yes. He, along with a slew of other questionable characters, Nathaniel said. According to the papers, Scotland Yard's throwing any person in a cell until their innocence can be proven irrevocably or until someone more frightening comes about. Uncle will have this sorted out, and you'll have wasted time moping for nothing.
I'd hardly consider proving his innocence a waste of time. Why police refused to let Uncle out of the asylum, I hadn't a clue. Nathaniel was right. Uncle certainly wasn't the only one being charged with the crimes. News sources are something else entirely. I can't believe you're reading any of it. I'd never seen such sensationalist rubbish strewn across every cover. Reporters couldn't get their fill of Leather Apron. They were creating a star out of a madman, glorifying a villain. The lengths people went through to sell a paper was nearly as disgusting as the crimes themselves.
Awful though they may be, the papers offer some amusement, sister.
Honestly, I said, the whole thing sours my stomach. Why turn a murderer of women into front-page news? I feel sorry for their poor families. That was enough dabbling in the strange and wonderful for me, thank you kindly. I needn't waste time on distractions. Nathaniel, however, was on a personal mission over the last 12 days to yank me from the depths of my despair. His answer to my troubles came in the form of 2 tickets to the greatest show on earth. Protestations fell upon deaf ears, so I relented. He'd had a disturbing amount of fabric brought over last week, in the hope that a new, colourful frock would chase all the dark clouds away. If only life's problems could be solved with a frilly dress and a pair of slippers. To hell with the world around us, so long as we looked our best.
Let's be on our way, then, Nathaniel said, checking the grandfather clock.
I followed him to the hansom cab, allowing the coachman to help me inside this time, relieved we were taking the fastest means of transportation we owned. I sat in an inky puddle of expensive silks, rearranging my skirts to make room for my brother in the small carriage, my mind churning with different angles to study the case from. Nathaniel sat beside me, looking like a child whose favorite toy had gone missing. I was a wretch of a sister. Here I was, all wrapped up in my own mind, selfishly ignoring the people who were still very much present in my life. You know, I squeezed his hand, I'm getting rather excited about the circus after all. Nathaniel beamed, and I felt mildly redeemed in the court of good deeds, even if I'd lied to get there. The Olympia was one of the most magnificent buildings in the kingdom. It rivaled even the palace in its splendor and sheer magnitude.
Look, there it is,
Nathaniel said, pointing toward the building. As our carriage pulled up to the enormous stone and iron compound, I watched a train chug by, puffing white clouds into the atmosphere in dizzying intervals. Steam was a fascinating source of power, so readily available and used in so many varying applications. I thought again of Father's unique drawings of old toys and war contraptions.
They could be on display all across London, perhaps even in the menagerie here tonight, for hundreds of people to marvel at. That was, if he hadn't stopped making them. The last train car screeched by and we were off again, making our way to the Olympia's front entrance. People filed in four at a time, all but fighting to catch the first glimpse of the greatest show on earth.
"Your friends are over there," Nathaniel said.
I caught sight of Victoria and her flock of emerald-coloured parrots scanning the crowd, but luckily they disappeared into the building without seeing me. "Shame we missed them," I said. I hoped to avoid them as much as possible this evening. I liked them well enough, but wanted to enjoy time alone with my brother. Taking our coachman's hand, I hopped down from the carriage, my heels catching in the cobblestones as I made my way to the line. "Do you smell that?" I asked. "Reminds me of Grandmama's home." Spicy sweet incense wafted over the crowd, spilling out through the arched doorway, filling the warm night air with sultry richness. Against my better judgment, my heart joined the mayhem, soaring between my ribs as if it were one of the pretty ladies on the flying trapeze. Giving in to childlike wonder, I grabbed my brother's hand, dragging him through large doors and into the grandest room in the world. Once inside, I slowly spun in place, my focus riveted on the domed ceiling.
"Nathaniel, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen."
The entire roof was made of glass and iron. Each and every last star pricking the sky, it seemed, watched the jeweled crowd, showing off their own dazzling diamond smiles.
"Truly, you should spend more time among the living, sister."
Nathaniel chuckled at my astonishment, but I couldn't quite tear my attention from the mesmerizing night sky. "Perhaps I will." My hand fluttered to my heart, resting there, as I gazed at slender iron bars arching high above us. I wasn't sure how such a thing was possible. How can so much glass and metal be supported by a smattering of iron branches? It was utterly beautiful, reminding me of looking up through a forest of metal.
"Must be one of those engineering wonders of the world," Nathaniel said, grinning.
Somehow he managed to escort me farther into the chaos. Swathes of alternating black and brightly colored silk hung from rafters, acting as patricians while billowing toward the crowd, inviting us to come in and be hypnotized by exotic wonders. Little bells and sparkling beads were sewn into the ends of the fabric, with gold thread weighing it down, creating a melodic tinkling whenever someone walked in or out, stirring the breeze.
"Oh," I gasped.
The luxurious panels reminded me of Grandmama's Zardosi saris, except on a much grander scale.
"Remember when Grandmama used to dress me from head to toe in the most elaborate saris?"
She told the best stories. She said Grandfather had been the British ambassador to India for only a fortnight before proposing. My younger self loved having the gold and crystal embroidered silk tied about my waist and draped over my arms, as if I were a princess holding court in her finest gown. I'd listen intently while she detailed how Grandfather had fallen in love with her, claiming it was all due to her lively spirit. Given the fire that crackled in her soul now, I could only imagine what she'd been like in her younger years.
"Grandmama told me she'd refused him 20 times just for fun," Nathaniel replied. "Said he squirmed like a cobra in a basket. That's how she knew he was in love."
"I'll keep that in mind for future proposals." Those memories warmed me as I took in the rest of the view. Individual stands stood along the perimeter of the cavernous room, giving one the illusion of being in bustling outdoor marketplaces and bazaars of India. People sold everything from imported silks and cashmeres to jewels, fragrant teas, and more food than the Queen probably had at her Golden Jubilee. Even little circus trinkets were available to take home, should one desire to do so. I found it hard resisting clockwork acrobats and mechanical tigers prowling around one table.
"Oh, Nathaniel, look! We must get some!" Naan and Bhatura with chickpea curry caught my attention straight away. My mouth watered with the promise of one of my favorite savory snacks.
I couldn't resist its charms, and soon I was dipping flatbread into the creamy chickpea curry and milling about the vendors like a happy child on holiday. I'd spied chicken curry and was certainly going to have some before we left.
I'm opting for a less messy version of food,
Nathaniel said, paying the vendor. Suit yourself, I shrugged as he purchased a box of sweets instead. After finishing our snacks, we glided through silk doors and feasted on the show. For a little while I forgot about blood and bolts, even asylums, heartache, and all the horror going on in the world, entranced instead by a stampede of around 100 Arabian horses, prancing about in the most lavish decorations I'd encountered yet. Gold chains were plaited through their glossy manes, catching the light and reflecting it back in prisms across their sleek faces, while dyed feathers of greens, yellows, and blues curled into the air a foot above their heads. The horses were well aware of their magnificence, tipping their noses in the air, expecting everyone to ooh and ah appropriately as they passed by. I shook my head. If I'd known I'd be outdressed by a bunch of equines, I might have at least worn a bodice with a few gemstones embellished on it. Nathaniel laughed outright, and I stuck my tongue out. Least I did my makeup and spritzed myself with that new perfume.
Next time, perhaps you'll listen to your older, wiser brother. Come.
Nathaniel gently tugged me from my wide-eyed wonder and led us to a gilded popcorn machine, looking as if it had been commissioned for the Queen herself. Feeling indulgent, we each got a bag, then were ushered to our seats by a silent woman wearing a yellow snake coiled around her throat like a living accessory. Traditional Mendi paint swirled and wrapped around her palms, wrists, and feet. We'd passed a booth where women were being painted with enchanting designs.
Oh! I pointed it out to Nathaniel. I must have my palms painted before we leave.
The snake stuck its tongue out, tasting the air as we inched by, then hissed. Nathaniel nearly tripped over the man seated beside the aisle, trying to dodge the reptile. I ran my fingers over its large, leathery head as I passed, stifling a giggle as my brother's eyes bulged and he swiped my hand away.
Are you mad? He whispered harshly. That beast tried eating me whole. Now you're making a pet of it. Can't you be normal and like cats?
He shook his head.
If we make it out alive, I'll buy you as many kittens as you'd like. I'll even purchase a farm in the country where you can house hundreds of them.
Don't be so squeamish, Nathaniel. I playfully jabbed his arm. Being terrified of an animal a woman's parading around like a scarf isn't very becoming now, is it? With that, he huffed, turning his attention on the new act crossing the stage. But I could see a smile curving his lips. The show was everything it promised to be and then some. There were aquatic acts, more horse acts, and acts taking place high in the sky. Women dressed in outfits made entirely of crystal beads swung from one trapeze to the next, catching their partners' corded arms before letting go and tumbling through the sky, fearless, shining, and free. I glanced at my brother and noticed he was already watching me.
It's good to finally see you smiling, little sister.
His eyes misted.
I feared I'd never get to see it again.
I laced my gloved fingers with his. I hated seeing him upset on a night our worries should be continents away. I opened my mouth to comfort him, then snapped it shut as a shadow darkened my view. An unwelcome patron stepped before us, bending slightly at the waist before settling his gaze on me.
Hello again, Nathaniel.
Blackburn extended his hand to my brother.
We met during your father's unfortunate incident. I also had the distinct pleasure of meeting your sister a couple weeks prior.
Superintendent Blackburn offered me a polite smile, then returned his attention to Nathaniel, who sat stock still.
I'm afraid I must speak with her for a few moments, on official police business.
Chapter 16. A Date to Die. Barnum and Bailey Circus, The Olympia, London, 25th September, 1888. Nathaniel sized the man up with the kind of scrutiny that made even me relieved I wasn't on the receiving end of his look. It was clear Nathaniel didn't appreciate the intrusion on a night meant to be light-hearted, especially from Scotland Yard, and he wasn't shy in expressing those feelings, even if the young man standing before us aided father.
I apologize, but it's urgent.
Superintendent Blackburn swallowed hard, feeling the full force of a Wadsworth's politely controlled wrath,
but didn't avert his gaze. Brave or foolish man, I hadn't quite made up my mind.
Perhaps bravery and foolhardiness were too closely related when it came to him. I narrowed my eyes. Now I knew why his name had sounded so familiar. Exactly how many times did you save Father from the opium dens, only to send him back to us without any proper treatment, Superintendent?
Audrey Rose,
Nathaniel hissed, finally returning the firm shake, possibly a bit harder than necessary, as Blackburn subtly rubbed his hand afterward.
It's quite all right,
the superintendent said.
My lovely sister's a bit spirited. Your last meeting is a memory that'll be burned into your mind for years to come, I'm sure.
Nathaniel's tone implied teasing, but his eyes held no hint of humor.
Apologies, but were you calling on her regarding the awful murders in Whitechapel, then?
He shot me a worried glance.
No matter how strong her heart, I do not agree with bombarding her with this mess time and again.
Afraid I can't say much, as the case is still under investigation. But yes, it has something to do with all that.
Blackburn pressed his lips into a firm line. He had a fine face for such a miserable human being.
I'm very sorry I was the one who took your uncle away. For what it's worth, I think very highly of him.
Nathaniel straightened his tie, but didn't say another word. I feared he'd reach over and slap the officer with one of his discarded gloves, should I show any more outward signs of being upset.
Might I have a word with your sister now?
Blackburn held his hands up when I made to protest.
It'll only be a minute. Contrary to what you both may believe, I don't wish to disturb your evening.
I couldn't control the laughter from bubbling up my throat. Oh, yes, because you're so concerned with disturbing people's lives without due cause. How silly of me to forget. Arresting an innocent man and destroying his reputation is rather dull, now that you mention it. Why not ruin his niece's evening as well? I smiled sweetly. Then you can add picking on innocent men and young women to your growing repertoire. Perhaps, I tapped a finger against my lips in mock contemplation, you should kick a child while you're at it. Shall I help pick one out? A flash of pain crossed his face, rendering me almost sorry for having said it. Then I recalled he was responsible for holding Uncle in an asylum, lovingly referred to as Bedlam, refusing him any visitors, and any trace of an apology fizzled away on my tongue. I lifted my chin, commanding myself to remain impassive. From the corner of my eye, I watched Nathaniel fidget with his cuffs. He was getting more upset by the second, and that was something I did care about. His evening shouldn't be ruined by this intruder. He looked at me, a silent question in his gaze, and I nodded. Might as well get this over with.
After you, sister.
Nathaniel stood, then motioned for me to do the same. Gathering my skirts in my fists, I moved into the aisle, not waiting to see if Blackburn was following. Once we made it to the main room, Blackburn took my elbow, guiding Nathaniel and me into a smaller area, sectioned off by elaborately painted wall screens, serving as the menagerie. When we were no longer working our way through the crowd, I yanked myself free from his grasp, then crossed both arms over my chest. I'm capable of walking from one room to the next on my own, Superintendent. His brows raised a fraction. I didn't care if I was being petty. I didn't care what he thought about me, and I certainly didn't care he was fighting a smile that very instant. I scowled again, wishing on every last saint he'd be struck down for being so blastedly annoying. He coughed into his fist, then glanced at the oddities surrounding us, only succeeding in aggravating me more. Planning on getting to the point of your rude interruption soon? Or am I supposed to be swooning and batting my lashes at my uncle's captor and my father's enabler? If that's the case, I'm afraid you'll be waiting until your bones turn to dust. I smiled, or at the very least, until you perish and I'm tasked with dissecting your body to check for a heart.
Audrey Rose, please,
Nathaniel whispered, looking horrified.
Don't aggravate the person responsible for holding Uncle under arrest and keeping Father's secret.
It's quite all right.
Blackburn nodded toward Nathaniel.
She's got every right to be upset.
Blackburn glanced around, making sure the three of us were alone, then drew in a deep breath. An uncomfortable feeling niggled the edge of my brain. Don't.
I shook my head, begging him to keep whatever toxic words he was about to say to himself.
I don't want to hear anything you've come to say. I've got more than enough to worry about as it stands.
Audrey Rose?
My brother reached for me.
You mustn't.
I needn't know a single thing more.
I cut my brother's protest off.
Not tonight.
It was childish, and I knew Blackburn wouldn't travel all this way only to leave without delivering the message. Still, I hoped he'd spare me an ounce of grief. His eyes filled with compassion, which was so much worse than his pity.
I thought it fair to warn you, Miss Wadsworth, he said. There haven't been any more murders since your uncle's been in the asylum. Some people are keen to find him guilty. They want this whole mess to be done with.
He watched my reaction closely, but I was numb, incapable of responding. It was as if I'd left my body and was watching the conversation take place. Blackburn stared at his feet.
He's tentatively scheduled to hang on the 30th of September.
That's barely 5 nights from now,
Nathaniel said, ripping me from my shadowy haze.
How can they possibly hold a trial and execution so quickly?
Hardly seems legal, I said, searching my brother's face for help.
That's because it isn't.
Blackburn took another deep breath.
Your brother's correct. There will be a trial, but it'll be far from fair. They'll find your uncle guilty and hang him before the ink on his execution order is dry. The public is out for blood. Members of Parliament have made proclamations. Your uncle's the perfect target.
Blackburn ticked off each of Uncle's offences.
He was in possession of blood-stained gears we found near the bodies. Someone of his appearance was seen with the last victim. He has no alibi for either murder. Worst of all, he possesses the skill it took to extract organs.
For goodness sake, is that all?
I waved a hand in the air. I possess those very skills. Perhaps I'm the murderer. I paced in the sectioned-off room, my hands clenching at my sides. I felt like a wild animal, forced to dance around for people's amusement, and loathed it. Maybe I'd free every last baboon, horse, and zebra in this circus before leaving this evening. Jumbo too, while I was at it. Nothing should suffer so incredibly at the hands of another. I turned my attention back on Blackburn.
Can't you stop this madness? Innocent people cannot be hanged. It's grossly unjust. Surely this can't be the end.
He shoved his hands into his pockets, avoiding my eyes as if he'd contract some wretched disease simply from looking upon me. Maybe he could. Hatred was drenching my entire being with its oily residue.
They've only just closed out the inquest of our former servant, I said, mostly to Nathaniel. There's got to be some way of repealing this abomination to our ruling system. They'll have to finish the inquest of Miss Annie Chapman, at least. Shouldn't that offer a bit more time?
Nathaniel bit his lip, seeming uncertain.
I'm still learning the intricacies of the law. I'll consult my mentor.
I stared at him, willing him to make everything better. My brother held his hands up.
I'll call on him now, see if I can get this all sorted out. Try not to worry, sister. I swear I'll do everything I can to save Uncle. You believe me?
I nodded. It was all I could do, but it satisfied my brother enough. He turned his attention on the superintendent, his voice cold.
Will you see my sister home? I assume you'll give her a decent police escort, especially after dropping all this into our laps.
It was useless telling Nathaniel I could hire my own carriage home, or look for Aunt Amelia and Liza and travel with them. So I kept my mouth shut while he made arrangements with the superintendent. When my brother was gone, Blackburn cocked his head, a movement showing a new calculating side I hadn't noticed before but knew existed.
Did you say Miss Marianne Nichols was your former servant, Miss Wadsworth?
Excitement radiated from him. I didn't trust him or his new mood, and promptly pressed my lips together. Last thing I wanted was to give Scotland Yard another reason to point their spindly fingers at my family. Undeterred, he stepped closer, filling the space with his enormous presence, forcing me to meet his inquiring gaze. I swallowed a coil of fear away. There was something dangerous about him,
though it could simply be because he held Uncle's life in his hands.
You do realize I may be the only person in London other than your family who cares whether or not your uncle lives. Won't you help me solve this case?
Blackburn asked.
Miss Wadsworth, I'm entrusting you to help free your uncle and apprehend the murderer.
He ran a hand through his fair hair, ruffling his already unruly locks. I wanted to help Uncle more than anything. I simply wanted to do it on my own, without involving the person who'd arrested him to begin with. Though it was flattering he respected my intelligence and amateur sleuthing enough to involve me at all. When I still hadn't uttered a word, he grabbed my elbow, spinning me about.
If you don't want to assist me, let's see someone you do want to help.
If you don't let go of me this instant, I said between clenched teeth, I'll be forced to employ a terrible fighting tactic my brother taught me upon your manhood.
Wrestling against his grip, I realized too late he'd eased off because he was smiling. I huffed, tugging my arm completely away. Threats weren't meant to be amusing. I imagine he wouldn't be grinning if I'd actually committed my defense technique, and I wished I'd just done it.
Where is it you think I'm following you to?
Bedlam, Miss Wadsworth.
Chapter 17. Heart of the Beast. Bethlehem Royal Hospital, London, 25th September, 1888.
Rumours of Bedlam being haunted by monsters were true. At least, they felt real enough, as we moved swiftly down cold stone corridors. I held fast to my silky skirts, keeping them as close to my body as I could, while walking by cells of criminals and the insane. Arms stuck out like tree branches, searching for things to root themselves to. Or perhaps they were searching for a way out of this dank hell. Blackburn did not hold on to me or offer his arm, trusting I could fend for myself in this abysmal place. Cries of tortured souls went up all around us, but we pressed on. The stench of unwashed bodies and chamber pots in desperate need of emptying was enough to turn my stomach inside out. The farther we sank into the asylum, the fouler the air became, until I was terrified of adding to the sickness surrounding us.
"This way,"
Blackburn said, leading us down another bleak corridor. My mind spun with uncontrollable thoughts. One of the most terrifying being how to explain my whereabouts to my aunt should Nathaniel return home before I did.
"It's a bit farther,"
Blackburn said over his shoulder, his footsteps clapping against the flooring as if a giant bell were tolling the hour during an otherwise silent night.
"Criminals are kept in the heart of the beast."
"How charming."
Chills struggled to unleash their demonic fury across my arms and back. I didn't enjoy thinking of this place as a living, breathing organism, one containing anything akin to a heart. Hearts usually conveyed compassion, and this place had long since lost that quality. The only beat keeping it going were wails of the damned. I didn't know how Blackburn could stand frequenting a place like this without it tarnishing his own soul. Inmates sobbed to themselves, speaking in made-up languages and screeching like animals in a menagerie. How my uncle was surviving this mess, I wasn't sure, but he was a strong-minded man. If anyone could be thrown in Bedlam and come out sturdier, it was Uncle Jonathan. He probably found a way of studying different mold specimens growing in patches along the dank walls and floor. The thought made me smile in the face of fear. That's precisely what Uncle would do in this situation. He'd turn it into a giant experiment to pass the time, never realizing he was actually set inside against his will. I'd probably have to coax him to leave once the time came for it. He'd say,
"Arrested? Are you sure? Perhaps I might spend another day going over my findings first."
Then I'd tell him why that wasn't a good idea, and he'd throw a fit. Once he was invested in an experiment, nothing else mattered. We walked as quickly as we dared, but I still spied broken men pacing in their cages, looking as feral as panthers. These men were different from the insane. There was a certain air of calculation in their fixed gazes. I didn't want to think of what they could do to me if they were to escape, and sped up until I was practically tripping on Blackburn's heels. I focused on other things to occupy my mind.
I was grateful Nathaniel had departed to speak with barristers prior to our excursion here. I hoped he was already finding ways of repealing Uncle's arrest. He'd put his all into the finest details of the law, never surrendering until he found success. Finally, we stopped in front of a cell that had only a few rusted bars set into solid stone near the top. Enough to pass food and water trays in, I assumed. Blackburn removed the ring of keys from his belt, which were handed off from a watchman when we signed in, and motioned for me to stand back. He was a fool if he thought I'd be anywhere but right there when he unlocked the door. I couldn't wait to see Uncle. Superintendent Blackburn nodded as if he'd already predicted my response.
Suit yourself, then.
With a creak and a groan that would wake things better off left sleeping, the cell swung open in a mocking gesture of welcome. Blackburn stepped back, allowing me to cross the threshold first. What a kind gentleman he was. A horrid noise emanating from the shadows raised goose flesh along my arms. Suppressing a flutter of panic, I marched into the lair of a scientist, where the haunting giggles of the newly insane greeted me, freezing at what I saw. What in the... I hardly recognized the creature my uncle had become. Crouching in the corner of his little stone cell, he rocked back and forth, while unearthly laughter poured from cracked lips. An upturned jug of water sat beside him, having run dry a long time ago from the look of it. What has happened to him? I grabbed onto the nearest bar, steadying myself against shock. How did he unravel so quickly? Surely he couldn't have lost that much of his mind in just a few short weeks. Something was very wrong. Blackburn said nothing. When Uncle wasn't cackling, he mumbled something too low for me to hear. Someone had only given him a thin shift to wear, and it was stained brown and yellow. What little food he'd been given had mostly ended up on his clothing. How anyone can treat a person this way is beyond my comprehension, I snarled. This is beyond unacceptable, Mr. Blackburn. Satan himself must lord over these lost souls. I didn't know what could be worse than hell or this place, but wished a thousand terrible deaths on the blackguards responsible for such cruelty. These were people, and they deserved to be treated as such. Grabbing a threadbare blanket from the floor, I shook it out, allowing dust motes to swirl in the pale light streaming in from the bars on the door. The cell was in the supposed heart of this place, yet there was a chill here that hadn't been present in the humid corridor. I approached my uncle slowly, not wanting to startle him, but desperately curious to learn what he was repeatedly whispering. The closer I got, the thicker the odor clung to molecules in the air. It smelled as though he hadn't bathed in the last 2 weeks and was using the floor to relieve himself. I fought a bout of rising nausea. His blonde moustache was long and unkempt, meeting new facial hair growth in haggard tangles. There was something strange about his eyes, apart from their unfocused, mad glaze. He looked terrified. After draping the blanket around his shoulders, I knelt down, inspecting him closer. That's when I noticed the upturned bowl of slop, and the strange consistency of it. My blood turned icy as the Thames in winter, freezing the rivers and tributaries of my veins in sickening waves. I'd kill whoever did this. I would slay the miserable beast so violently, I'd make our Whitechapel murderer seem like a harmless kitten playing with a ball of intestinal string once I was through with them. He's been drugged! I glared at Blackburn, as if he had a personal hand in the matter, which, since he'd arrested him, it could be argued he had. He slowly crossed the room and crouched beside me, avoiding my accusing stare. It wasn't uncommon for the so-called insane to be given tonics to calm their minds, but my uncle was neither insane nor in need of such medication. God only knows what this powder is capable of, I said. Can't you at least protect him while he's in here? What good are you? Or do you simply excel at being terrible? Blackburn flushed.
In a place like this, intoxicants are often the only way of keeping the peace.
His voice trailed off as I glared at him.
It's inexcusable, Miss Wadsworth. I assure you it wasn't done with malice. Most everyone here is dosed with experimental serums.
Wonderful! I feel so much better!
I tugged a ribbon from my hair, then tore a length of fabric from the bottom of my skirts and scooped some of the goo into my makeshift cloth bundle before